Thank you for supporting WBEZ. You keep public media public. December gifts are among the most important because they set the tone for our reporting in 2026. Next year, we're doubling down on bringing you stories that arm you with the facts. This journalism relies on everyone contributing what they can. Join them today at wbez.org/donate.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago, where research meets real-world impact. The master's program in social work blends classroom learning with extensive field education guided by faculty known for groundbreaking research. Applications are open at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work. Inspire change. Shape the future.
Ending homelessness is a bipartisan issue, but getting on the same page about how to approach it, that's a different issue altogether. This is Reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. For years, past administrations supported a model called Housing First. It prioritizes getting people long-term housing before services like mental health care or substance abuse treatment. But now the Trump administration wants to shift that focus onto treatment and is targeting a small federal agency that promotes Housing First. All this is happening at the same time the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development is anticipating staffing and budget cuts that could further impact homelessness and housing programs. To learn more, we turn to a panel of leaders at the front lines of the issue. Christine Haley is the Illinois State Homelessness Chief. Cindy Soto is Chicago's Chief Homelessness Officer. And Mark Ishog is the CEO of Thresholds, a nonprofit organization that provides Chicagoans with housing and health care. I started by asking Christine more about what the Housing First model looks like. Here's what she said.
Housing First is an evidence-based model. Sometimes people use it interchangeably with permanent supportive housing, which is affordable housing, and for individuals who are typically chronically homeless, meaning those who have a disability and who have long histories of homelessness. Mm-hmm. But it also includes intensive wraparound services that are individualized to that individual's or family's needs. And Housing First, at its core, is a belief that housing is a human right. Right, that we move away from ensuring that people are housing ready, meaning that they are compliant with medications or that they are sober or that they're in AA and to be ready for an apartment, but instead that we house someone first to be able to then ensure that folks are able to access the services that they need, that folks are able to find a job that would support market rate rent. But the first step is housing. Mm. And when you think about this concept of housing first, we wouldn't think about saying that someone needed to be eating ready, right? That in order to give someone a meal, they need to go to a budgeting class or that they need to go to financial literacy classes before receiving a meal. But we say that concept of being housing ready is that you need to take classes, you need to be sober, you need to be in an environment where you're ready for housing.
I hear that. I have to say my first thought before I went down the rabbit hole of learning more about this model, I thought, how can you put someone in housing before you set them up with things like treatment or a job? So how does Housing First, you think, address that, Cindy? Because I hear what Christine is saying about making sure that housing remains a human right.
Right. I mean, the model itself also comes with a holistic set of services. So it's not just housing. And so the permanent supportive housing component really addresses the overall needs, whether they are, behavioral, health, other related needs. And it's a service that's guaranteed for a set of years, likely. And so it is really an opportunity for people to not only find housing, as Chief Haley noted, it is a human right, but to also seek other services for themselves that then would trickle down to their loved ones, their children, their family. So it is an integration in the community that I think a lot of people might not know is happening, but that we all value.
Absolutely. So tell us, Mark, what this model looks like at Thresholds.
Yeah, so those Thresholds, since 1959, has been providing housing and wraparound support services for people with mental illness and the most vulnerable in our communities. And we have been a proponent of Housing First before the terminology even existed, because our tagline at Thresholds is home, health, and hope. Mm-hmm. And we say all the time that it starts with housing. And through our outreach teams that are working with homeless individuals in Chicago and on the CTA, we do everything we can to engage them into services and then to help them find permanent supportive housing. So Housing First and support services, these are not mutually exclusive terms. There's a lot of people that do not need the support services or wraparound services. Yeah. Their homelessness is related to poverty and the lack of affordability.
Yeah, tell me more about what that means for a person and the difference it makes when in situations where wraparound services are not required for people.
Right. So for the vast majority of people that Threshold serves, people with serious mental illnesses and substance abuse challenges, histories of incarceration, histories of homelessness, histories of being institutionalized in nursing homes, these thousands of people that we serve benefit from the wraparound services that we provide: case management, psychiatry, supported employment, supported education, all of these things that help them on their road to recovery. Now, for a lot of our partner agencies that are serving the poor or the working poor or otherwise unable to afford those market rate levels of expensive housing in Chicago, what they need is Housing First and housing and services available to them if they require them or need them. What we don't want to do is wrap services around people that don't require or need them. And for Threshold's clients in general, they both want and need those services. Yeah. It's the difference between being successful in housing and not being successful.
And so we're clear, Christina, is Housing First, is this the typical approach in Illinois?
Absolutely. I think that that is, one, there's an evidence base. I think, two, when we talk about those who really need the intensive support services, those that will need a much longer-term subsidy, we usually think about that as being about 10% of the population of people experiencing homelessness, right? So not everyone is in need of permanent supportive housing. However, everyone is in need of a home. Everyone deserves a home. Everyone needs a home. And so I think the piece of housing folks first and folks being able to identify affordable housing in their communities is what every community in. I talk to municipalities all over the state. I talk to folks who are experiencing homelessness all over the state, mm-hmm. and really accessing a home is the number one priority.
What I'm hearing you say is that Housing First, it works.
Absolutely. Absolutely. One, we understand that it works because they're in communities across the state, people are able to live in supportive housing and in Housing First programs for, 90% of people who are enrolled in a program stay enrolled and are able to be enrolled year after year until they move on, right? So there could be that income increases, right? So you're able to move into an apartment, no longer need the subsidy. It could be that as the population is aging, people are able to move into senior housing, right? So there's different opportunities. And some folks just, quite honestly, might just need a voucher to support them longer term.
That said, Sandy, how concerned are you about the changes coming from the federal level?
You know, we know we're being watched. We know that this is a critical time in our city, in our state, and country. But we also are committed to solving homelessness through housing. The mayor strongly believes that the answer to homelessness is more housing. As the panelists have said too, this is not just an issue that pertains just to the city of Chicago. It is statewide. It is a national issue. It is to a point, and when we look at other countries, many people across the globe are going through the same challenges of just finding affordable, accessible, safe, and stable housing. Mm-hmm. And so, although we are, watchful of what is happening, we are very hopeful that with measures that we've taken, like the bond ordinance, cut the tape, we're now going through a 5-year plan on homelessness across the city, where anyone can share with us what they believe the city should be doing to address homelessness. And so we're hoping to be able to think, boldly in new ways of how we can support our residents who are both, struggling financially or have some other needs that we need to address as well.
So, Mark, when you hear that Housing First programs are now being targeted by the federal government, what comes to mind?
Well, it's so disheartening and so disingenuous We have 40 years of research, some of which I did when I was running the AIDS Foundation of Chicago, where we did a randomized controlled trial to look at people who were in housing with support services, but housing first, versus 200 people who were not. And the evidence was overwhelming. And ours was just one of a multitude of studies that showed better health outcomes for the people in housing first with wraparound services, less utilization of ERs and hospitals and nursing homes and jails and the police incarceral system. And we saved money. So we both saved money and we made people healthier through a model that has been proven time and time again. So to have these conversations about cutting when we know exactly the kind of investment we need to be making, with 650 to 700,000 people homeless in this country, we have the evidence and the history of showing what works. And now we're having conversations about taking that away. And at the same time, we're having conversations about cutting mental health funding. So the disingenuousness of this argument that we need to focus on mental health before we put people into housing, when there are real threats to mental health funding, the loss of SAMHSA, Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration funding, where staff have been decimated and programs are being threatened. I mean, this is an existential crisis for the people that we serve, not to mention the organizations that serve them.
Christine, can the federal government do this? Can they just say, hey, you can't use this approach anymore? And if so, I mean, how concerned does that make you?
Yeah. So I think that's what we are trying to understand. We are trying to understand what are in the providers' contracts. And so that's what we're monitoring right now. So homeless service providers have recently received their supportive housing and rapid rehousing contracts. They've seen changes in the language to those contracts, including affirmations of not supporting diversity, equity, and inclusion work. Also looking at understanding understanding what language is there related to gender. So we're trying to understand what impacts this will have on the community. I think we're also seeing at the federal level that that cuts have started, right? So I think that we are within the homeless space. So the one that is most that we see very clearly is the emergency housing vouchers. Mm-hmm. Emergency housing vouchers were created during the pandemic to support people experiencing homelessness move out of congregate settings within shelter into their own apartments. And that HUD announced that they would not renew that program. So
The Trump administration's gutting HUD itself.
Yes.
Right?
So
that Interagency Council on Homelessness. So, yeah, tell us more about the connection.
Sure. So in Illinois, we have about, 1,800 people who are currently housed in emergency housing vouchers. We heard last week from the New York Times, they wrote an article talking about that the Housing Choice Voucher Program, commonly known as Section 8, could also be in danger. That supports over 99,000 households in Illinois. And last week, the staff of the U.S. Interagency Council on Homelessness, their staff were all placed on administrative leave. And they serve as the coordinating body for homelessness at the federal level. So their main job is efficiency.
Yeah.
Their primary role is understanding how do we support multiple federal agencies around strategy, around coordination, around vision. So agencies like HUD, the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, the Department of Justice, Transportation, Veterans Affairs, Social Security, right? So their goal is efficiency. And I coordinated with their staff quite often. Each quarter, they convened us as state leads on addressing homelessness. Multiple communities utilize their resources, like their federal plan to prevent and end homelessness, their plans around prevention and a prevention framework. They help us as states and as local communities be more organized, strategize. And so their loss will reduce coordination and strategy.
Cindy, I want you to piggyback off of what Christine was just talking about and just talk more about how that federal funding and these shifts that we're seeing or potentially seeing to programming could impact our state and local efforts.
Absolutely. Our delegate agencies, our nonprofit organizations, you know, are currently facing a lot of threats, as, you know, has been noted. The language change is going to impact the way that they deliver services or the way that they open their doors to people. And so we're working together with our local continuum of care to ensure that the language changes, and currently what we're seeing to be maybe the biggest threat in the grant agreements to our continuum of care, which receives a substantial amount of federal dollars to address homelessness. If we can support our community partners to kind of weather this moment, and if it's a matter of ensuring that we are adhering to the changes of the federal government, you know, we haven't seen financial cuts yet, but we are, you know, just trying to be in lockstep with what that would mean to our own partners and the dollars that we deliver to our delegate agencies. Because if we're supporting an organization that is looking at rapid rehousing, but they're no longer able to support, you know, through another means, if they have compounded funding or whatnot, then they ultimately are at risk of closing their doors. Yeah. And what does that mean to the general public? It is a dire situation that can possibly transpire.
And we are not sitting back and just letting this happen, right? We are organizing. We are using our political muscle as we can as 501c3 nonprofit organizations, and organizing our clients and standing up for what is right. You know, we can't back down at this moment.
Yeah.
This is a moment that requires us to organize and to fight back. You know, one bit of good news in all of this sea of sadness is that in the next couple days, probably, Thresholds will be closing on a 100-room SRO, single-room occupancy building in Uptown, that would otherwise have been lost to the private market and become probably another upscale, expensive micro-apartment, which are nice, but not what we need more of.
That's
in
great.
The city of Chicago.
That's
we're
great.
Just literally days away, and this is because the city of Chicago stepped up to partner with us. Four, five, six foundations that have already committed the capital. So like, we're going to be able to close this week, we hope, preserve 100 units of a naturally affordable housing. And it's like small things like this that we also have to continue to do, because this is a moment that requires us literally to stand up and fight back.
Yeah. Is there anything we can do, Cindy?
Well, one, the five-year plan would be a wonderful opportunity for everyone in Chicago to contribute, either to share with your networks, to attend one of our events, to let us know. You can complete the survey at chicago.gov/MOH, Mayor's Office of Homelessness. But really, ultimately, as was noted, you know, it really is about coming together. This is a collective moment, right? And we really need to work with one another in ways that we probably haven't been challenged in the past, right? We need to look at policy shifts, like the SRO preservation ordinance being one that's critical, but also just what else can we do differently that perhaps we haven't envisioned in the past, and continue to engage our congressional delegation.
Right.
You know, our senators, our Congress members are trying their best for the state of Illinois to ensure that dollars are protected. So what can we do with our federal partners to have a collective message that says we believe in housing first? It is a model that has been proven.
I've just got less than 30 seconds, Christine. Anything you can share from the state level as far as preparation or what we can do to help?
Absolutely. So I think it's starting also at the local level, right? That in your neighborhood, if there is housing or a shelter that is could be built, saying yes, that we want affordable housing, we want housing in our neighborhoods so that everyone can have a home.
Yeah.
At the state level, I think we are continuing to monitor what are the what cuts may be coming and in what ways we can be more supportive of our local municipalities. But I feel very grateful to be in a state with a governor who is protective, and we're following his and other leaders' leads.
We'll have to leave it there. Christine Haley, Cindy Soto, and Mark Ishak, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Micah Yasin. It was mixed by Ari Mejia and edited by Dan Tucker. Reset brings you thoughtful conversations on the news you care about. If you want to stay tuned in, subscribe to the podcast. We drop new episodes every weekday with a special episode on Saturdays. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk again soon.
love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.